Hey there, this is Amanda Kelly with Joyful Heart, and I am so glad that you found me. In this podcast, I just share my heart, I love to share scripture, and I love to dish out encouragement. So thanks for finding me. I pray that this podcast encourages you and fills you with joy. Hello, this is Amanda Kelly with Joyful Heart Family. And I would like to share with you a story called The Three Weavers, written over 100 years ago in 1905 by Annie Fellows Johnston. It is a fairy tale for fathers and mothers as well as their daughters. I hope you'll like it. It was something that I heard a few years ago, and then I went and read it, and I wanted to share it with you. The Three Weavers. There she weaves by night and day a magic web with colors gay, and moving through a mirror clear that hangs before her all the year, shadows of the world appear. There she seems the highway near, winding down to Camelot. There the river eddy whirls, and the surly village churls, and the red cloaks of market girls press onward from Shalott. Sometimes a troop of damsels glad, an abbot on an ambling pad, sometimes a curly shepherd lad, or long-haired page in crimson clad, goes by to Camelot. And sometimes, through the mirror blue, the knights come riding two by two, she hath no loyal knight and true, the Lady of Shalott. And here we begin our story. Once upon a time, the same time that the Lady of Shalott wove her magic web, and near the four gray towers from which she watched the road running down to Camelot, there lived three weavers. Their houses stood side by side, and such had been their equal fortunes that whatever happened under the roof of one had always happened under the roofs of the others. They wove the same patterns in their looms, and they received the same number of shillings for their webs. They sang the same songs, told the same tales, ate the same kind of broth from the same kind of bowls, and dressed in the same coarse goods of hodden gray. But they were unlike as three weavers could possibly be. The first insisted on weaving all his webs a certain length, regardless of the size of the man who must wear the mantle. Each web was supposed to be just long enough to make one mantle. The second carelessly wove his any length that happened to be convenient, and stretched or cut it afterward to fit whomsoever would take it. But the third, with great painstaking and care, measured first the man and then the web by the inches and ells of his carefully notched yardstick. Now to each weaver was born a daughter, all on the same day, and they named them Hertha, Huberta, and Hildegard. On the night after the christening, as the three men sat smoking their pipes on the same stoop, the father of Hertha said, "Do not think me puffed up with unseemly pride, good neighbors, but wonderful fortune hath befallen me, and mine this day. Clotho, the good fairy of all the weavers, was present at my Hertha's christening, and left beside her cradle a gift, a tiny loom that from beam to shuttle is of purest gold. And she whispered to me in passing, 'Good fortune, Herthold. It is written in the stars that a royal prince shall seek to wed thy child.' But Herthold's news caused no astonishment to his neighbors. What had happened under the roof of one had happened under the roofs of all, and the same good fortune was written in the stars for each, and the same gift had been left by each child's cradle. So the three friends rejoiced together and boasted jestingly among themselves of the three kings' sons who should some day sit down at their tables. But presently Hildegard Mar, the father of Hildegard, said, 'But there may be a slip 'twixt cup and lip. Mayhap our daughters cannot fulfill the required condition. At that they looked grave for a moment, for Clotho had added in passing, "One thing is necessary. She must weave upon this loom I leave a royal mantle for the prince's wearing. It must be ample and fair to look upon, rich cloth of gold, of princely size and texture. Many will come to claim it, but if it is woven rightly, the destined prince alone can wear it, and him it will fit in all faultlessness, as the falcon's feathers fit the falcon. But if it should not be ample and fine, meet for royal wearing, the prince will not deign to don it, and the maiden's heart shall break, as broke the shattered mirror of the Lady of Shalott." "Oh, well," said Herthold, when the three had smoked in silence a little space, "I'll guard against that. I shall hide all knowledge of the magic loom from my daughter until she be grown. Then, under my own eye, by my own measurements that I always use, shall she weave the goodly garment. In the meantime, she shall learn all the arts which become a princess to know, broidery and fair needlework, and songs upon a lute. But of the weaving she shall know not until she be grown, that I am determined upon. 'Tis sorry work her childish hands would make of it, left to throw the shuttle at a maiden's fancy fickle." But Hubert shook his head. "Why stew about a trifle?" he exclaimed. "Forsooth, on such a tiny loom, no web of any kind can well be woven. 'Tis but a toy that Clotho left the child to play with, and she shall weave her dreams and fancies on it at her own street will. I shall not interfere. What's written in the stars is written, and naught that I can do will change it. Anyway, friend Hildegardmar, with thy forebodings." Hildegardmar said nothing in reply, but he thought much. He followed the example of the others, and early and late might have been heard the pounding of the three looms, for there was need to work harder than ever now, that the little maidens might have teachers for all the arts becoming a princess, broidery and fair needlework and songs upon the lute. While the looms pounded in the dwellings, the little maidens grew apace. They played together in the same garden, and learned from the same skilled teachers. Their daily lessons, and in their fondness for each other, were as three sisters. One day Hubertus said to the others, "Come with me, and I will show you a beautiful toy that Clotho left me at my christening. My father says she gave one to each of us, and that it is written in the stars that we are each to wed a prince if we can weave for him an ample cloak of cloth of gold. Already I have begun to weave mine." All silently, for fear of watchful eyes and forbidding voices, they stole into an inner room, and she showed them the loom of gold. But now no longer was it the tiny toy that had been left beside her cradle. It had grown with her growth, for every inch that had been added to her stature, an inch had been added to the looms. The warp was Clotho's gift, all thread of gold, and it, too, grew with the maiden's growth. But the thread the shuttle carried was of her own spinning, rainbow-hued and rose-colored from the airy dream fleece of her own sweet fancies. "See," she whispered, "I have begun the mantle for my prince's wearing." Seizing the shuttle, as she had seen her father do so many times, she crossed the golden warp with the woof thread of a rosy daydream. Hertha and Hildegard looked on in silent envy, not so much for the loom as for the mirror which hung beside it, wherein, as in the Lady of Shalott's, moved the shadows of the world. The same pictures that flitted across hers flitted across Hubertus. "See," she cried again, pointing to the mirror, "that curly shepherd lad.
Does he not look like a prince as he strides by with his head high and his blue eyes smiling upon all the world? He carries his crook like a royal scepter, forsooth. Well, you may believe I am always at my mirror, both at sunrise and at sunset, to see him pass by. The long-haired page in crimson clad is more to my liking, said Hertha timidly. Methinks he has a noble mind, as of one brought up in the palaces. I wonder why my father has never said anything to me of Clotho's gift. I, too, should be at my weaving, for I am as old as you, Huberta. And I also, added Hildegard. Ask him, said Huberta. Maybe he forgot. So when Hertha reached home, she went to her father, Herthold, and said timidly with downcast eyes and blushes, Father, where is my loom, like Huberta's? I, too, would be weaving, as it is written in the stars. But Herthold glowered upon her grimly. "'Who told you that it is written in the stars?' he demanded so sternly that her heart quaked within her. "'Hear me. Never again must you listen to such idle tales. When you are a woman grown, you may come to me, and I may talk to you, then, of webs and weaving. But what have you to do with such things now? You, a silly child? Bah! I am ashamed that ever a daughter of mine should think such foolishness. Hertha, shamed and abashed, stole away to weep, that she had incurred her father's scorn. But the next day, when they played in the garden, Huberta said, My father is an old tyrant to forbid me the use of Clotho's gift. He cannot love thee as mine does me, or he would not deny me such a pleasure. Come, I will help you to find it. So hand in hand they stole into an inner room, by a door that Herthold thought securely bolted, and there stood a loom like Huberta's, and over it a mirror in which the same shadows of the world were repeated in passing, and as Hertha picked up the shuttle to send the thread of a rosy daydream through the warp of gold, the long-haired page in crimson clad passed down the street outside, and she saw his image in the mirror. "'How like a prince he bears himself!' she murmured. "'My father is indeed a tyrant, to deny me the pleasure of looking upon the world, and weaving sweet fancies about it. Henceforth I shall not obey him, but I shall daily steal away in here, to weave in secret what he will not allow me to do openly.' At the same time, Hildegard stood before her father, saying timidly, Is it true, my father, what Huberta says is written in the stars? Today, when I saw Huberta's loom, I pushed back the bolt, which is always barred at the door leading into an inner room from mine, and there I found the loom of gold and a wonderful mirror. I fain would use them as Huberta does, but I have come to ask you first if all be well. A very tender smile lighted the face of old Hildgardmar. Taking the hand of the little Hildegard in his, he led the way into the inner room. "'I have often looked forward to this day, my little one,' he exclaimed, "'although I did not think you would come quite so soon with your questions. "'It is indeed true what Huberta has told you that is written in the stars. "'On the right weaving of this web depends the happiness of all your future, and not only yours, but of those who may come after you. 'Tis a dangerous gift the good Clotho left you, for looking in that mirror, you will be tempted to weave your web to fit the shifting figures that flit therein. But listen to your father, who has never yet deceived you, and who has only your good at heart. Keep always by thy side this sterling yardstick which I give you, for it marks the inches and the ells to which the stature of a prince must measure. Not until the web is fully equal, it can be safely taken from the loom. You are so young, 'tis but a little mantle that you could weave this year at best, fit but to clothe the shoulders of a curly shepherd lad. He pointed to the bright reflection passing in the mirror. but 'tis a magic loom that lengthens with your growth, and each year shall the web grow longer, until at last, a woman grown, you canst hold it up against the yardstick, and find that it doth measure to the last inch and ell the size demanded by a prince's noble stature. But thou wilt oft be dazzled by the mirror's sights, and the youths will come to you one by one, each begging, "Give me the royal mantle, Hildegard. I am the prince of the stars, that the stars have destined for you." And with honeyed words, he'll show you how the mantle in the loom is just the length to fit his shoulders. But let him not persuade you to cut it loose and give it to him, as your young fingers will be fain to do. Weave on another year, and yet another, till you, a woman grown, can measure out a perfect web, more ample than these stippling youths could carry, but which will fit the prince in faultlessness as falcon's feathers fit the falcon. Hildegard, awed by his solemn words of warning, took the silver yardstick and hung it by the mirror, and standing before old Hildgardmar, with bowed head, said, "You may trust me, father. I will not cut the golden warp from out the loom until I, a woman grown, have woven such a web as thou myself shalt say is worthy of a prince's wearing." So Hildgardmar left her with his blessing, and went back to his work. After that, the winter followed the autumn, and the summer, the spring many times, and the children played in the garden, and learned their lessons of broidery and fair, needlework and songs upon the lute. And every day each stole away to the inner room, and threw the shuttle in and out among the threads of gold. Hertha worked always in secret, peering ever in the mirror, lest perchance the long-haired page in crimson clad should slip by and she not see him, for the sheen of his fair hair dazzled her to all other sights, and his face was all she thought of by day and dreamed of by night, so that she often forgot to ply her needle or finger her lute. He was only a page, but she called him prince in her thoughts, until she believed him one. When she worked at the web, she sang to herself, "It is for him, it is for him." Huberta laughed openly about her web, and her father often teased her about the one for whom it was intended, saying, when the village lads went by, "Is that thy prince, or is it for this one you weavest?" But he never went with her into that inner room, so he never knew whether the weaving was done well or ill. And he never knew that she cut the web of one year's weaving and gave it to the curly shepherd lad. He wore it with jaunty grace at first, and Huberta spent long hours at the mirror, watching to see him pass by all wrapped within its folds. But it grew tarnished after a while from his long tramps over the dirty moors, after his flocks, and Huberta saw other figures in the mirror which pleased her fancy, and she began another web. And that she gave to a student in cap and gown, and the next to a troubadour strolling past her window, and the next to a knight in armor who rode by one idle summer day. The years went by, she scattering her favors to whomsoever called her sweetheart with vows of devotion, and Hertha faithful to the page alone. Hildegard worked on, true to her promise, but there came a time when a face shone across her mirror so noble and fair that she started back in a flutter. "Oh, surely 'tis he," she whispered to her father. "His eyes are so blue, they fill all my dreams." But old Hildgardmar answered her, "Does he measure up to the standard set by the sterling yardstick for a full-grown prince to be?" "No," she answered sadly, "only to the measure of an ordinary man. But see how perfectly the mantle I have woven would fit him." "Nay, weave on, then," he said kindly. "Thou hast not yet reached the best thou canst do. This is not the one written for you in the stars. A long time after, a knight flashed across the mirror blue, a knight like Sir Lancelot. His broad, clear brow in sunlight glowed, on burnished hooves his war horse trode. From underneath his helmet flowed his coal-black curls as on he rode, and he rode down to Camelot. So noble he was that she felt sure that he was the one destined to wear her mantle, and she went to her father, saying, "He is asked for the robe and measured by thine own sterling yardstick. It would fit him in faultlessness, as the falcon's feathers fit the falcon." Hildgard Marr laid the yardstick against the web. "Nay," he said, "this is only the size of a knight. It lacks a handbreadth yet of the measure of a prince." Hildgard hesitated, half pouting, till he said beseechingly, "I am an old man, knowing far more of the world and its ways than you, my daughter. Have I ever deceived you? Have I ever had aught but thy good at heart? Have patience a little longer, another year, and thou will be able to fashion a still larger web." At last it came to pass, as it was written in the stars. A prince came riding by to ask for Hertha as his bride. Old Herthold, taking her by the hand, said, "Now I will lead thee into the inner room and teach thee how to use the fairy's sacred gift. With me for a teacher, you canst surely make any mistake." When they came into the inner room, there stood only the empty loom, from which the golden warp had been clipped. "How now?" he demanded angrily. Hertha, braving his ill humor, said defiantly, "You are too late, because I feared your scorn of what you were pleased to call my childish foolishness. I wove in secret, and when my prince came by, long ago I gave it to him. He stands outside at the casement." The astonished Herthold, turning in a rage, saw the long-haired page clad in the mantle which she had woven in secret. He tore it angrily from the youth and demanded she should give it to the prince who waited to claim it. But the prince would have none of it. It was of too small a fashion to fit his royal shoulders, and had been defiled by the wearing of a common page. So with one look of disdain he rode away. Stripped of the robe her own fancy had woven around him, the page stood shorn before her, as if a veil had been torn from her eyes, and she no longer saw him as her fond dreams had painted him. She saw him in all his unworthiness, and the cloth of gold which was her maiden love, and the rosy daydreams she had woven into it to make the mantle of a high ideal lay in tattered shreds at her feet. When she looked from the one to the other and saw the mistake she had made in the opportunity she had lost, she covered her face with her hands and cried out to Herthold, "It is your fault. You shouldn't have laughed at my childish questions to scorn and driven me to weave in ignorance and in secret." But all her upbraiding was too late. As it was written in the stars, her heart broke, as broke the shattered mirror of the Lady of Shalott. That same day came a prince to Hubert, asking for his daughter. He called her from the garden, saying gaily, "Bring forth the mantle now, Huberta. Surely it must be a goodly one after all these years of weaving at thine own street, sweet will." She brought it forth, but when he saw it, he started back aghast at its pygmy size. When he demanded the reason, she confessed with tears that she had no more of the golden warp that was Clotho's sacred gift. She had squandered that maiden love in the bygone years to make the mantle she had so thoughtlessly bestowed upon the shepherd lad and the troubadour, the student and the knight. This was all she had left to give. "Well," said her father at length, "'tis only what many another has done in the wanton foolishness of youth. But perchance, when the prince sees how fair you are and how sweetly you do sing to the lute, he may overlook the paltriness of your offering. Take it to him. When she laid it before him, he cast only one glance at it. So small it was, so meager of gold thread, so unmeet for a true prince's wearing. Then he looked sorrowfully into the depth of her beautiful eyes and turned away. The gaze burned into her very soul and revealed to her all that she had lost forevermore. She cried out to her father with pitiful sobs that set his heartstrings in a quiver. "It is your fault. Why did you not warn me what a precious gift was the gold warp Clotho gave me? Why did you say to me, 'Is this the lad? Is that the lad?' till I looked only at the village churls and wove my web to fit their unworthy shoulders, and forgot how high is the stature of a perfect prince?" Then, hiding her face, she fled away. As it was written in the stars, her heart broke, as broke the shattered mirror of the Lady of Shalott. Then came the prince to Hildegard. All blushing and aflutter, she clipped the threads that held the golden web of her maiden love, through which ran all her happy girlish daydreams, and let him take it from her. Glancing shyly up, she saw that it fitted him in all faultlessness, as the falcon's feathers fit the falcon. Then old Hildegard, stretching out his hand, said, "Because even in childhood days, you ever kept in view the sterling yardstick as I bade thee, because no single strand of all the golden warp that Clotho gave thee was squandered on another, because you waitest till thy woman's fingers were the best that lay within thy woman's heart, all happiness shall now be yours. Receive it as thy perfect crown." So with her father's blessing light upon her, she rode away beside the prince, and ever after, all her life was crowned with happiness, as it had been written for her in the stars. The end. And that is the story of The Three Weavers by Annie Fellows Johnston, written in 1905, a fairy tale for mothers, fathers, as well as their daughters. The Lady Shalott that is referred to here is a poem, an ancient poem that you can look up and read as well. I pray that this story, this allegory, encourages you and that you enjoy it. Thanks so much for listening today. Again, this is Amanda Kelly with Joyful Heart Family, and I pray that this was a blessing to you. And if it was, I'm going to invite you to write a review or tell a friend about our podcast. I would really appreciate that so that that can help us get God's word and this podcast in more people's ears. Hey, I wanted to also let you know about several other resources that I offer that would totally bless you and your family. So I have Joyful Heart Family at www.joyfulheartfamily.com, which is a resource and a website with different inspiration and encouragement for your health, your wellness, your family, your relationship with God, even creating happy family traditions. I also have joyfulheartdance.com, which I started a family-friendly, God-honoring, dad-approved dance program for families. We offer classes online and in person in our Glendale, Arizona home studio. Visit joyfulheartdance.com or joyfulheartcourses.com to learn more and to take some of those online classes. I also started a courses website where we have inspiring and educational information and resources for you to grow in whatever area you are looking for. It's joyfulheartcourses.com. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you so much. Now go have a blessed and joyful day.